Thank you for joining this afternoon's program of At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. It is the 20th of April, and you can listen to today's show and all other shows on our archives at www.heritageradionetwork.com and via podcast. And we'll start today's show with a thank you to our sponsor, Barter House. The Barter House is proud to support the Heritage Radio Network and its community of food lovers. The Barter House works with family vineyards and small bottlers from around the world to bring only the finest and most flavorful wines to market. Committed to sustainable agriculture and artisanal production, the Barter House offers outstanding wines at a wide range of price points to retailers, restaurateurs, and private collectors. To learn more about the Barter House, please visit them on the web at www.thebarterhouse.com or call them at 917-463-3076. And I'm going to throw another number at you as well for any call-ins for our listeners at 718-497-2128. And start today with a week in wine recap. And in latest news, Decanter.com reports on a big battle which has been drawn between America's wine producers and wholesalers. Producers are mobilizing to thwart a new House of Representatives bill they fear would block wineries' direct shipment to consumers. The Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America, a powerful lobby in the U.S., is backing this bill, which some politicians and wine producers alike have claimed is the most onerous consumer wine law since the passage of the 18th Amendment to the Constitution and the onset of Prohibition. Sales direct from wineries to consumers bypass wholesalers' monopolies in the standard three-tier regulatory system, under which producers must sell to middlemen who sell to retailers. A huge debate, as the measure could very potentially devastate California's and other states' wine industries and stunt economic growth, as well as stifle the sales from artisanal small producers whose wines wholesalers won't take on. Yikes, that's going to be an interesting one to watch. And in the crop report, 2009 Bordeaux en Primeur is reportedly off to a slow start based on the amount of wines yet to be released. Interest remains quite high in the 2009 vintage, however, and of the wines already released, such as Chateau Beaumont, wines are at prices higher than the 2005. There is undoubtedly more interest from Asia, notably China, than there was in 2005, but China's interest will most likely step up for En Primeur for select top labels. Merchants in the UK, meanwhile, are continuing to hype up the vintage, with Gary Boom of Bordeaux Index declaring that returns of 20% within 1 year are realistic for key wines of 2009 quality. And we'll be back after this short break with my guest today, Krista Voisin of Roberta's Restaurant, who oversees the wine program here. Whatever you do, you always gotta watch motherfuckers around you. Nobody's invincible, no plan is foolproof. We all must meet our moment of truth. The same shiesty cats that you hang with and do your thing with could set you up and wet you up. Nigga, peep the language, it's universal. You play with fire, it may hurt you or burn you. Lessons are blessings you should learn through, let's face facts. Although MCs lace tracks, it doesn't mean behind the scenes there ain't no dirt to trace back. That goes for all of us, there ain't nobody to trust. It's like sabotage, it's got me ready to bust, but I can't jeopardize what I've done up to this point. So I'ma get more guys to help me run the whole joint. Cultivate, multiply, motivate, or else we'll die. You know I'll be the master of the who, what, where, and why. See, when you're shining, some chumps will wanna dull ya. Always selfish, jealous punks will wanna pull ya down, just like some shellfish in a bucket, cause they love it to see your ass squirm like a worm. But just as you receive what is coming to you, everybody else is gonna get this too. I ain't no saint, therefore I cannot dispute that everyone must meet their moment of truth. Actions have reactions, don't be quick to judge. You may not know the hardships people don't.
You are listening to the Heritage Radio Network and At the Root of It. And that is a tribute to Gangstar, whose lead rapper Guru passed away today from cancer. So rest in peace, and we'll continue to play a few songs for you today. And welcome to my guest, Krista from Roberta's. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you could join us. And it looks like today is quite ripe with visitors to the restaurant who are outside our little studio waving in. Is this a normal scene here?
Yeah, we have a school group in today to come and check out the garden and how that translates to the restaurant and the food that they eat. Oh. So they're on a nice little field trip today.
Excellent. When did this program begin? I didn't know about it.
I think we've been doing them on and off probably since the garden opened.
Mm-hmm. Are they going up to the rooftop garden as well?
Yeah, they're going to be taking a tour of everything just to see how things grow and what we do with everything. So there's a lot of community interest, and we do get some teachers that like to involve gardening and cooking in their curriculum.
Mm-hmm. So the local public schools are extending that program to after-school students?
Yeah, it's really wonderful. You know, it translates to math, it translates to science and social studies.
Mm-hmm. I wish I had that when I was growing up in CT. Yeah. Well, leading into that, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background, where you're from, and when you joined the Roberta's team.
I came on to Roberta's about 3 months ago in January. I was working with Eddie, the general manager at Oto, mm-hmm. and he gave me a call one day and said, "Hi, we need a wine director." And I said, "Okay, here I come." There wasn't much conversation to be had. I was really excited mm-hmm. about joining the team here. I really respect what goes on here, and I'm just really proud to be a part of it.
Excellent. And how long were you at Oto for?
I was at Oto for a little over a year. That was my first job in New York. I had come from San Francisco. I went to culinary school in San Francisco, not really knowing what I wanted to do after culinary school, mm-hmm. exactly what my position would be. But I knew food had to be some part of my career.
Sure.
That's always been an interest to me, I think, since I was about two.
Yeah.
So it, you know, seemed to be a very natural
oh, good.
Fit for me.
Yeah. So this is a nice peak then.
Yes.
And interesting that you were at an Italian restaurant and working with an Italian list, and then also segueing into Roberta's, which is an all Italian list, if not necessarily primarily Italian, correct?
No, I do have some things from Long Island. Chris Tracy from Channing Daughters.
Also a previous guest on the show.
Yeah. Yes, he has a nice prominent spot on the list. I really, really love what he does.
Mm-hmm.
He came and taught a class here, and the staff really enjoyed the time that he spent here. He's got a very good palate, eye, ear, whatever senses are involved in winemaking.
Sure.
He's excellent.
And then do you have some Spanish wines as well?
We do have some Spanish wines on the list. You know, things just like the Italian wines, what I look for is just a focused on terroir, which is, you know, a flavor in the bottle that exhibits its surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can get a picture, just a postcard picture of what a certain place looks like, I like when that translates in the bottle.
Absolutely, yeah. And more wine producers and regions, I feel like, are championing that as well, as opposed to just making overly manipulated wines for what they think people want. So,
yeah, it's a wonderful way to incorporate all five senses when you take a sip of wine, you know? If you have a visual picture of what a place looks like, or if you've been there, even if you've seen it in a book, you know, when your taste buds can trigger
mm-hmm.
any other sense besides taste.
Yeah,
I think it's a phenomenal thing.
Definitely. And I think from a food standpoint, too, just given your culinary background, to note on that, when I think about drinking particular wine, I'm also thinking about eating a particular food, they go hand in hand as I'm thinking what I would be eating as I was sitting in that country, or whether it be in a city or in the countryside, what dishes would be served that would be a great pairing for a wine from that region too.
Absolutely. Taste has an amazing way of triggering a sense memory,
mm-hmm.
and it brings you back to something that you've done, a place that you were sitting, an article that you were reading.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And before the show, you were mentioning in addition to your culinary education, you also took an ecology class in San Francisco. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yes, that I think was one of the best things that I've done in my career. You know, I was just at that time cocktailing at a place called Vesuvio in North Beach, which was an amazing experience, and, you know, working different places. And so I had my days off, and I decided to take an ecology class at City College in San Francisco because I felt like it would be interesting because, we're very interested in food activism right now, mm-hmm. and local and sustainable and organic and biodynamic and all of these words, sure. you know, that are labels. And I wanted them to be more than a label to mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. So I took this ecology class to just really get a whole sense of how things grow and why we eat them. And, you know, from day to day, it was definitely a science class, but I took out of it what I needed to take out of it, mm-hmm. you know, for my career to make sense to me, because I knew that I had a philosophy about why people eat what they eat and why we should eat what we should eat. And just taking this general basic community college class really brought it in for me.
I'd imagine in San Francisco that'd be a good place to do it as well, with such access to the outdoors and you know, being able to see the farms and the wines that are giving you the products that you're taking.
Absolutely. We took a field trip to Mendocino, which is about 3 hours north of San Francisco, and we camped out kind of on the beach, and we were just sort of given a tour of the ecological environment around us. Mm-hmm. You know, we did some bird watching, and we talked about plants and, you know, why certain plants had sort of like a sheen over them and why the leaves were shaped the way they were. And it was really an amazing experience.
Yeah. But you don't necessarily originally hail from San Francisco.
No, I'm not from San Francisco. I lived in San Francisco for almost 6 years.
Okay.
But I am from Houma, Louisiana. Okay. Which is a smaller city about 60 miles south of New Orleans. If anybody was wondering if there was anything south of New Orleans, yes, there is. My family is there.
Okay.
And then my childhood, I actually spent outside of Houma, which is about Bayou du Large, which was a bayou and a highway and lots of good card games and food and family. Yeah.
I have not been down there, shockingly enough, to Louisiana. Hopefully make it down for the summer Conference of Tales or something like this. But always been intrigued a bit by the food and the lifestyle down there. So love to touch upon that as I think about the dishes and the wine that we're drinking today, which we'll talk about later, and how that kind of translates to some of the food pairings that would go from that region.
Yeah, you know, growing up, I looked forward to, you know, every Sunday my grandmother cooked. And I have four uncles and an aunt, and we all got together on Sunday, and my cousins next door did the same thing with their family, and we had our lunch, actually, which, you know, a very French influence, we call lunch dinner.
Okay.
There, and when you eat at night, it's supper.
Wait, so lunch dinner was an afternoon meal?
Yes.
A late afternoon meal?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that might stem from déjeuner, perhaps. Okay. But, you know, we would call and say, "Hi, Mama, what are you cooking for dinner?" But, you know, the things that she made and that my family makes, like gumbo and jambalaya, all of these things are very, very normal for me. And to think that they're kind of exotic, you mm-hmm. know, everywhere else in the country and really sought after and written about and spoken about very, very passionately. And that was very interesting to me when I moved away because, you know, of course, when that's just what you do,
sure.
you know, you really don't think about the history behind it.
And the history is there pretty rich.
The history there is amazing. There's a lot of backbone, especially, you know, in New Orleans and the Acadiana, mm-hmm. as they call it, which were the Cajuns that came down from Canada after the British sort of kicked them out. You know, these are people that traveled sort of down the Mississippi River on their own. You know, we've got fur trappers and hunters and shrimpers, things that are a big part of the culture today. This was a livelihood.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it still is. But there's sort of a backbone there and a pride, you know, which you hear about, you read about, but it's really there.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very proud to be from Louisiana.
Nice. Now, as you mentioned, the Cajuns, that was, from my understanding, in terms of cuisine, something that was popularized in the 1980s, also by a chef, Prudhomme.
Yes, right. Paul Prudhomme. Yes.
And then there was Lagasse, Amarole, afterwards. But Cajun cuisine is different than Creole.
Yeah, the difference between Cajun and Creole cuisine is basically Cajun is what you cook at home.
Mm-hmm.
Creole came out of the restaurants of New Orleans. In Creole cuisine, you do find a bit more things like butter sauces and definitely more Parisian French technique.
Sure.
Whereas Cajun cuisine is born out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one pot classics. That's where your jambalaya and your gumbos
sure.
come from. You know, it's something that you can put on the fire and tend to everything else that needs to go on.
Is it fair to say that the Cajun was more of a stemmed out of the peasantry and Creole was more of a aristocratic kind of beginning in the sense that you had African and Indian servants preparing food in the kitchen and there was this melting pot of all these different cultures that were seemingly making sense on the stove.
Yeah, absolutely. Creole cuisine, of course, is born out of, you know, the people that work in the kitchens and imparted their influence. So when you think of Creole cuisine, I think you think more of tomato and spicy, you know, things that are very prevalent in Caribbean and African cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
The things that my family cook, you know, of course, are well seasoned and very delicious. But I don't think they were necessarily overtly spicy or overtly salty.
Sure.
Or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on the beverage front, are people drinking wine? Down there in terms of homes? I know there's plentiful restaurants in New Orleans, but is it part of that culture as well?
Wine, I don't think, is necessarily part of the Cajun culture. There's definitely an amazing wine market in New Orleans. You've got Martin Wine Cellars on Decatur Street. There's a local grocery store, Rouse's, that actually has an amazing wine selection. But as far as it being a part of day-to-day life, I would have to say,
yeah,
no, there's not so much wine drinking.
I feel like the wine that we're drinking today could go quite well with some of the spicier dishes and just white wines in general in that hotter climate and with some of those flavor profiles that you mentioned in the cuisine would go well. Some of the Rieslings, the dry Gruner Veltliners, things like that.
Yeah, this Kerner that we're going to talk about later has an excellent little pop of sweetness
mm-hmm.
that, you know, counteracts, you know, the salt and pepper flavors.
Sure.
And, you know, you do get a little spicy in there. We throw some Zatarans in pretty much, you know, everything. So
excellent. Good. Well, we will be back to talk about this wine and also the Italian wine trail just after this short break. Mad rhymes will stifle ya. Lines like rifles go blast when I kick some ass. A lot of rappers be like one-time wonders. Couldn't say a fly rhyme if there was one right under their noses. I hate those motherfucking poses, but I'm so real to them it's scary. And with my unique skills, nah, you can't compare me. And no, we don't make whack tracks. And all the suckers get pushed back when I'm kicking real facts. I represent, set up shit like a tech boy. You're paranoid cause you're a son like Elroy. And you'd be happy as hell to get a record deal. Maybe your soul you'd sell to have massive business. I'm greater than all MCs. When I breeze, give me room, please. I be like fascinating when I be updating. Cutting off white kids, pulling their trump cards. I thump hard and make them say that I'm God. Niggas be pretending they're hardcore. Never know the meaning of it. But I get props like a slogan, and no man could ever try to diss when I kicks my jam. Lyrically deaf and connecting, complete mic wrecking. No double checking, vocals kill like weapons. But if I have to, I go all out with no mic. Yeah, that's right, cause I survive mad fights. And for my peeps, I truly care. Cause without some of them, I wouldn't be here. And they all know how I feel. The suckers be like playing themselves to have mass appeal. Mass Appeal by Gangstar.
Another shout out to Guru, who passed away today. And a shout out to Roberta's, as well as to Barter House Wines. We have a lovely Conspire Sauvignon Blanc made from Amy Aiken, who has been a guest on At the Root of It. One of the first guests, actually, a female winemaker out in Napa. A beautiful Conspire Sauvignon Blanc, first release this year. Peach and melon flavors, great spring wine, brought to you by Barter House. And the other wine that we're drinking today is a Kerner, which Krista has brought. And this is one of those small grape varietals that is one of the 1,500 varieties that exists in Italy, which make it that much more difficult to learn about these Italian wine regions. But good segue into talking about it. So,
yeah, we're sipping on the 2008 Abbazia di Novacella Kerner, which is from the region, the Trentino Alto Adige in northern Italy, shares an alpine border with Austria and a little bit of Switzerland. Mm-hmm. The Kerner is an amazing springtime wine, kind of perfect on a day like today.
Definitely.
But I love the Trentino Alto Adige because they seemingly make very simple wines.
Yep.
And in that simplicity is really a real beauty in the glass. You get all this perfume. I mean, I've personally never been to the region, but you know, I watched
either.
A lot of Heidi and The Sound of Music when I was, you know, when I was younger. I still do.
Doesn't that label even bring you back to that?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think of just standing in an alpine valley with these crystal clear springs that run down from the mountains and all of this lush greenery around you and, you know, Edelweiss, the little white flowers.
Sure.
I just think that translates so well into this glass. I mean, you just get these really aromatic, and we're in an alpine region, so a little bit cooler climate, higher altitude that drives up the crispness and the acidity in the wine, which makes it just perfect to sip on, you know, one of these spring Bushwick days. but also really pairs well with the things that we do here at Roberta's. I love Carlo's philosophy, and Carlo is our executive chef, by the way. His philosophy in cooking is just to find the best ingredients available.
Mm-hmm.
And cook to a way that really just exacerbates their natural qualities.
Sure.
You know, not over-seasoned, no emulsions or anything like that. Just finding really quality products and presenting them on the plate as simply as possible. And that's the kind of wines that I try to find for Roberta's. And I think the Kerner and Trentino Alto Adige wines, specifically right now in the spring, because of their crispness and their grassy kind of herbal,
sure,
essence to the,
yeah,
herbal essence.
And to note, you know, it's interesting because Trentino is the southern part of the region, and Alto, meaning high, is the, mm-hmm, the higher part, and Alto Adige, also known as Sudetrol, the more Germanic part of that region. It's definitely more influence from Germany than it is from Italy, and then Trentino is more influence from Italy. So it seems like a very cool kind of melting pot of all these different bordering countries.
Which I think may be the part of it that appeals to me, because as we were talking earlier, you know, I'm from Louisiana, which is in itself quite a melting pot of African and Caribbean and French cuisine and Spanish cuisine. Maybe, you know, at the root of it,
mm-hmm,
so to speak, mm-hmm, is, yeah,
good one.
Is why these wines really appeal to me. But especially right now, we're springtime. We're starting to use a few things from our rooftop garden, and a lot of spring herbs, and there's just an aromatic quality to these wines that really pair well with what we're doing right now. And you also have things like a speck, which is sort of like a smoked,
oh, yeah,
prosciutto.
So good.
You know, that you know, we use a lot of pork here,
mm-hmm,
at Roberta's. You can pretty much find pork in everything.
Thank you, Heritage.
Thank you very much, Heritage. Little shout out there.
Yep. Well, it's one of those things that I think has become, especially this producer, certainly wines that people are going to take more of a chance on if you have someone like yourself who's well-versed in them or is making that sale, knowing their inherent qualities and being able to describe the wine as it corresponds to something that they're more familiar with. So if, imagine if you're kind of seeking out these smaller producers from lesser-known regions and really trying to make that kind of an interesting experience for the guest, that goes a little bit of part of that selling into the mix as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Kerner is not something that you would see on every wine list, you know, things as prolific as Chardonnay and Pinot Grigio and whatnot. But these wines and me being here, you know, 10% is me finding really good wines to get to put in the restaurant and go with our food. And really the other 90% is teaching the staff about them and translating these wines in a way that I see them that fits everyone's comfort level and, you know, the way that they learn. Some people are facts and figures type people. Other people have, you know, we were talking about sense memory.
Sure.
You know, really trying to appeal to each and every person. And, you know, as a customer, what I really enjoy is, you know, taking these sort of small things that not everyone has heard of and just surprising you at the table.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to ask, you know, on behalf of all of the sommeliers in the world, don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to try something that you've not tried before.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think more these days people are interested in hearing what the sommelier like to choose. And I get often, I'll leave it in your hands. And they do, and that's much more fun.
It is really fun because, you know, what we obviously we really enjoy wine, but there's another part to it. There's the service aspect to it, where we just really enjoy you enjoying the wine and the food.
Yeah.
And to see your face light up when you like something that's surprising to you that wasn't known to you before is really at the heart of it why we're in this game.
Absolutely.
Is to share what we love.
Yep. In the midst of the break as well, I was mentioning I was reading Decanter this week, this month's Decanter, and there was an interview with, you know, rock star, legendary Angelo Gaia from Piemonte, who was noting that his thoughts as to Italy's next move would be pronouncing white wine in Italy, the next big thing. And I just was curious to hear your thoughts on that as we explore these different varietals that are popping up around the country.
Well, good for him. I would say it's about time for Italian whites to be up there with white Burgundies and California Chardonnays, you know, all of these things that already have a name, because the whites out of Italy are so expressive. They're, you know, every picture that you've seen in a magazine about Italy, you know, these white wines just really translate. I mean, I can't say.
Well, they're just
enough.
So diverse. I mean, each region is so, you know, vastly different from the other. I mean, the wines from Val d'Oeste, you know, all the way down to Sicily, and the range of climates and soils which go in between that distance is wide. So it's exciting to be on that path and exploring that. Any other regions that you have on the list that you're excited about that for spring that you've just brought on? I saw you have a rosé as well, a Nebbiolo rosé.
I have a Negro Amaro rosé right now from Puglia, from Cantelle, which is a wonderful spring summertime rosé, because you do get the cool and the crisp and the full palettes that you like from rosé, but then in the background is this really nice spice and earth. And I also have Channing Daughters Rosato of Merlot, which is almost clear in the glass. I mean, it's barely pink, barely copper, but such a full expression. There's aromatics and there's just flavor that really carries so well into even the heavier, you know, relatively speaking,
heavier
dishes.
Is that a new one
dishes.
For them?
I think so. I think that they
might have had
some,
a grind risotto for a bit, but
I tasted their Merlot. I believe they have a Cab Franc risotto and a Refosco risotto, and the Merlot was really exciting.
Oh, I can't wait to try that.
Yeah, and I also have a little bottle of a risotto of Vernaccia Nera, which is a varietal from Tuscany, and this one's from La Marche.
Mm-hmm.
I also really like La Marche wines, which is a smaller Italian state on the Adriatic coast, on the eastern coast mm-hmm. of Italy, making some very, very expressive wines. And Vernaccia Nera, usually when vinified as a red wine, is just reminiscent of if you take the pepper shaker and just crack it over something, the wines remind me of that.
Nice.
So I'm very excited to taste this risotto, which I have not tried yet.
And then also to visit the northern Trentino Alto Adige region at some point. Anything else that you have to say before we close up? We're going to have to go. So I appreciate all the insight that you've lended to these different places in the world that you've been a part of.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the show. Anyone out there listening, if you've not been to Roberta's yet and especially experienced the wine list here, please do so and ask for our advice, because each of the servers, they're very passionate about the restaurant as well, and everyone has their own recommendations and suggestions about what they like, and that's really what we thrive on, is finding something exciting
cool
for everyone else to try. So please come.
Well, thank you. And thank you to our producer today, Jack Inslee, and engineer, Nat Wiener. Signing off on the 20th of April at The Root of It with my guest, Krista Voisin. Very, very nice last name. And your host, Aaron Fitzpatrick. See you next week.
El antifaz que tu maldad cubría cayó para exhibir.